Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, and welcome to episode 56 of the PreparedX Podcast. In this brief podcast, I'm going to be talking about emergency operation centers, situation rooms, war rooms. They're called various different things within the corporate space, and I'm going to be, you know, specifically talking about the importance of emergency operation centers for corporations. Government agencies, certainly here in the U.S., have predetermined emergency operation centers. FEMA has them at the federal level. They have them certainly at the state and local level as well. And these locations are physical locations where we can convene a team. So I think that's the important thing. It may be for a corporation, a conference room. Sometimes it can be virtual as well. But we do advocate that if you do have the core team in one location, that you have a physical room or location that you go to. And if it's an event that can be managed on site, then you go to that room that's on site. If it's an event where you have to leave the building, maybe there's a fire, you have a secondary location that you can go to and start to manage the event from. So we certainly advocate that where there's a physical event, you know, that's impacting operations within the organization, because great things happen when we get around the table in terms of trust, in terms of decision making, in terms of getting the key people around the table. We also understand that you know, many organizations do have you know, resources that are all over the country or world, even as it relates to their crisis response. So, you know, there are many virtual environments that are virtual operation centers, if you will, that teams work from, and they practice those and they work work well. But we certainly, again, advocate that if you have a physical event and you're in a location, the core team is in a location or a number of locations, that, you know, teams start to gather around the table and start to work together. To look at resources and where resources are required to go, to start your briefings, you know, start to get situational awareness, what's happening, and when you got the right people around the table, and those teams come together, those individuals, those cross-functional areas of the business come together and start to do those briefing cycles, those, you know, again, you know, disciplined meetings, good things happen. So, you know, we're real big advocates of the Emergency Operations Center for corporations. Again, situation room, war room, you know, different businesses call it different things. When we run these exercises for our customers, we find that, you know, there's nothing formal often in plans. Some organizations do have a formal room to go to, and no matter what's happening, because it is an unfolding situation, that room becomes a key resource for the team. And then whatever's happening in that room at the time, the team comes in and takes over that room and starts to manage the event. And again, you know, those that do have it documented, you know, those teams know where to go immediately to start the response, or maybe there's a phone call initially to activate the team, and the team convenes on that location. So we'll talk a little bit more about what happens once you get to that location. Again, primary EOC should be established at the main area of the facility for the business, and having a secondary location, you know, could it be a hotel close by? Could it be another location that you've got an agreement with another business within the community that you're in, business community that you're in, where you can have a location. If you have an issue, you go to there, and if they have an issue in their building and your building's secure and safe, they can come and utilize one of your rooms to help manage their own event. So again, really important to have a secondary location that is off-site. So what's the main purpose then of these EOCs? You know, it really helps for those coordinating the event to, you know, help acquire and allocate and track resources. So, you know, what do we need? Who do we need? Where do we need to send them? So, you know, what, where, when, if you will. So what's going on? What's happened? Where has it happened? What do we need? And so those really important things that happen in those first few minutes and hours. So the location becomes, you know, central location to, you know, to manage and track resources. Information as well. Really important part is, you know, manage and share information. You know, it's sometimes a little more difficult if we're in a virtual capacity to have a real clear understanding when we've got 30, 40, 50 people. I've heard even, you know, even more people on some calls when events are unfolding. So it becomes very, you know, difficult to manage and make decisions in those types of situations. So, you know, being able to have a formal briefing cycle process where you know at a certain time to be in a location or on the phone to listen into that briefing and share that information that comes from one location and not from multiple different locations becomes really important. So it's a central hub of managing and sharing that information. It helps you establish response priorities as well. So, you know, what are we going to do and what do we need to do in these first few minutes or hours of the response? And again, from a decision-making standpoint, all the decisions come from that one location, from the Emergency Operations Center and the leader within that Emergency Operations Center. Obviously, provide legal and financial support as well as other, you know, human resources related support and those other cross-functional areas of the business. So, you know, I think that's, again, you know, a hub of decision makers for different areas of the business and support functions as the event starts to unfold. I think one really important one is it becomes a location where if you've got external support, and again, I mentioned, you know, physical events, active shooter, fire, you know, natural disaster, it becomes a central location for outside agencies to help coordinate the response with you, especially if it's impacting just your organization. So law enforcement and fire departments or emergency medical personnel, you know, you have a central location where they can come, they can get information from you and can start to help in terms of coordinating the response. So that becomes, you know, a key piece as well. They may have their own emergency operations center if it's a wider event that's impacting a community, for instance, a natural disaster, an earthquake, tsunami, you know, floodings, whatever it may be, hurricanes. So they will already have that if it's a wider, but if it's your organization, then they'll probably want to come into your EOC, your location. And it really helps them see that you're organized, that you have a location that's been predetermined where people will meet and start to coordinate from. So they would appreciate that. And they'd appreciate coming into your exercises and practicing that as well. I know certainly a lot of the oil and gas industry do this already, and they work closely with the emergency or the NIMS system, the National Incident Management System, the ICS system, the Incident Command System. So they'll practice this, and they'll have their own EOCs, and they'll follow a very similar model to that of you know, the governments in terms of incident command and EOC management. But certainly, at your level in the organization, in the business, if it's something that's impacting you, I think the EOC becomes a really important environment to come into. And it goes without saying, really, that you want to organize your EOC to facilitate, you know, effective operations, right? So an effective organization has various characteristics. One is the ability to acquire, analyze, and act on the information. Acting on the information, factual information, analyzing, making sure that it's accurate. Again, that, you know, becomes easier to coordinate that if you have this one location where people can come into that environment and find that information, disseminate that information and make decisions. Really having flexibility as well, because, you know, situations do change. So, you know, making sure that we have the ability to adapt. And again, that becomes easier if we're sat around a table or we have one EOC location where we can come into and make those very quick decisions versus, you know, having multiple people on a phone call and everybody looking for someone to make a decision for them. Great things happen from a trust and a leadership standpoint when we can see each other across the table. We've practiced in our drills and our exercises to make these decisions, and we've come into this EOC environment in our training and, again, in our exercises, and we've practiced the various tools and resources and communication devices to make sure that we can, you know, again, facilitate the response. So, again, an important piece. You know, an ability to anticipate change as well as maintain public confidence. Again, it goes without saying that if you have this organized and disciplined environment, it, you know, becomes easier to be able to do that. So I just want to touch on communications briefly. You know, it's important that you have redundancy, goes without saying. So you obviously have primary set of communications, but what if those systems fail? How are you going to communicate and coordinate with your teams? You know, what's your backup plan for that? So just, you know, think about that in terms of communications. You know, some organizations will obviously, you know, rely on their internal, you know, phone systems and their various different ways to communicate within their own networks. But, you know, if you're having challenges with the network, how are you going to communicate outside of that? So put some thought into, you know, how you would do that. It's really important that you also understand that the different ways to communicate during an event become, you know, really important for the external stakeholders as well. So you may be communicating internally with various internal systems, but how are you going to communicate externally? And how are you going to communicate with those various, you know, family members, media, you know, who's going to do that and how they're going to do that in terms of those different systems. So, you know, you need to think through that as it relates to your EOC. One really important part is activating the EOC. So when is it, you know, formal now that we have an EOC and we should all meet there? So think about that from a response standpoint. Who makes the decision to bring the team together to activate the team? And once the team is activated, is the EOC then activated? We'd also advocate that the crisis coordinator role, and if you heard episode 55, you'd have heard me talk about that role, that individual would come into that EOC and already be organized and ready to go. So when the team arrive, you know, things are moving quickly, and documents are starting to get filled out. You know, you got your master events list starting to be filled out, and the various other documents that you need to have in terms of your incident action plan or anything else that you have within your planning documents. So that again is a really important piece. Often, you know, the crisis coordinator, a good one who's practiced this, who's set everything up ahead of time, knows that they're going to go to, you know, the meeting room on floor 4 in whatever building, because that is the primary location, that when he or she gets there as a crisis coordinator, has set the room up and got documents moving through the portal, you know, they've got the phone systems ready, you know, activated, you know, the various communication devices, you know, got the conference line up and running, if you will. And then when you walk in as a team, you're literally, you know, hitting the ground running, so to speak. So, you know, activating the EOC and thinking about how that happens and triggering that is really important. So who makes that decision at the various levels of the organization? If it's at the if it's at the plant level, the facility level, or the, you know, the warehouse level, you know, is it the general manager there that makes that decision to activate the EOC? Who is it at the corporate level? And obviously, if the executive team is getting together, you know, the CEO typically making that decision that the EOC should be activated and the team should come together. So the EOC should be at all levels. Shouldn't just be at the, you know, the corporate level. You know, if you're an organization with multiple facilities around the world, you should have each of those teams, local teams, emergency response teams, or whatever they're called locally, local crisis management team, they should have a location and as backup location as well, identified, so everybody knows where to go to when something happens. Obviously got people traveling, so those people could call in to the EOC, but everybody knows that there is a focal point for the team to go to and start to manage and respond to the event. There's lots more information on EOCs. The last thing I'm going to touch on, though, is testing and making sure that you validate the EOC's, you know, plan, if you will. So when you go into that environment as a crisis coordinator, you know, and as a crisis team or emergency team, depending on what, you know, what you are, it's important that you just, you know, practice that. Come into that environment during your exercises. So if you're running an exercise, actually use the room that's identified as the EOC. We've seen that before in exercises where a room's been identified as an EOC, but we've run a tabletop exercise in a totally different area of the facility or a totally different building or location. But if you've got a primary location that's identified in your plan, then go to it and practice it during your exercises. You know, make sure you use those, you know, systems that you're going to use during a real event. Make sure you practice the activation process. You know, that's really an important piece of having an EOC, is making sure that it's actually of value to the team. So, you know, rehearse all those different components during your exercises. That's really important. So anyways, lots more information. You can go to all kinds of different government websites as well to get, I think ready.gov is a good resource. We've got a fair amount on emergency operations centers as well at preparedx.com. So you can check out various blogs as well as some more podcasts. I'm sure we've mentioned it before in other podcasts as well. Through our guest interviews as well as our own podcast. So, you know, you can go there and check out that resource, but certainly there's a ton of information. I would say that the government has a lot more detail. You can probably take courses on emergency operations centers, tremendous amount of detail that they get into, and they have to from a coordination standpoint, because obviously they're coordinating, you know, significant large events. But as a business, much on a much smaller scale, it's just about being organized and about having a central location where we can come and start to coordinate a response from. And again, you know, if you've got a small team that can start to convene there, others can join throughout the first few minutes, days of the event, hours, then, you know, that's a good thing. But again, we do advocate that you try and have a physical location where the team can come to and start the response to the event. Even if the event ends up being a non-starter, if you will, or something that, you know, just is not an emergency at the end of the day, you know, just practice coming together, practice that activation piece, and practice how you would set up that EOC. So as a crisis coordinator or an EOC director, as they're known within the emergency management world. So, you know, practice that piece and having that physical location. And also the offsite piece as well. I've seen some organizations have an offsite location identified, a separate EOC and an asset where they can go to offsite, but they've not practiced it. So if you do have an a location that's offsite, do it during one of your exercises. Activate the team and say, we've got a fire in the main building. You know, we're going to use our alternate EOC, go to that location, and then just, you know, see what happens, see how it unfolds, see how people get there, see what the challenges are logistically about getting into that that room. You know, and then you can iron any details out there before you actually, you know, have to use it for real. And hopefully you won't have to, but you'll know what the challenges are because you've practiced that through your exercises. So anyway, that's it from episode 56 of the PreparedX podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Write your comments. If you're looking at this through our website, there's a place underneath the podcast here where you can write your comments. We'd love to hear from you about this and any of our other podcasts. If you're listening to us through iTunes or any of the other podcast outlets, we'd love to have your feedback. You know, rate us on iTunes and any of the other outlets. That's important for us. So please go in and let us know what you think. Until next time, have a wonderful, happy, and safe day. Take care.